The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
For a parent, one of the most amazing milestones to occur in their child's development is the ability to speak. It is an aspect of the human condition that continues to intrigue researchers around the world, especially those looking at some of the problems that can occur in language development. At UW-Milwaukee, a team of scientists is involved in one study that's exploring what happens with the large numbers of infants and toddlers who these days are in childcare when they begin to talk. On this edition of UWM Today, we meet Paula Reiner, Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders in the College of Health Sciences. Welcome, Paula. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Tom.
So it really is a miracle when you think about the fact that we can speak. It really is that separator between us and all the other mammals in the world.
It is a miracle, and especially when you think about all of the number of things that could go wrong that would have a negative influence on a child's ability to learn language and to learn to speak.
And that really is one of the reasons why you are doing the study you are, which is to take a look at that environment, the culture in which language skills are beginning to be formed or shaped.
I am.
Tell us about the work.
Yes, I am especially interested in the social interactions that children have within their environments and how those interactions can influence their language learning, the acquisition of language skills. We have a number of different theories about how children learn language, and one of those theories is actually the social interactionist theory, which says that much of what children learn in their normal development is learned within the context of their social interactions. And I would also include in that their interactions with their environment in general. So interactions with objects in the environment, such as the toys that they're playing with. So when we think about the social interactions that children have as they're learning language and acquiring language, a primary context for those interactions is their interactions with their caregivers. And for very, very young children, their primary caregivers are their parents. And so parents have played a critical role in facilitating their children's language development. What's amazing to me is that parents are not trained on how to help their children acquire language. And yet we intuitively do it. We do things in terms of the way we interact with our children, the way that we observe what our children know, what they're able to do, and how we present things to them in terms of challenging them and getting them to do more in the way of language, that
It just comes natural, right?
It just comes natural.
Well, and you know, that's a really good point, because as I think about the way in which our kids learned how to speak, as I heard you describe what comes naturally, it's really true. There was no book that I read. There was no text that you're required to read that says, if you want your child to speak, then you have to do ABC. It just sort of comes out of us, doesn't it?
It does. It is very natural. And there has been quite a bit of research that actually shows that not only is it natural for us to make some very systematic kinds of changes in the ways that we talk with very young children compared to how we talk with adults.
Because there is a difference.
There is a difference. And the adjustments that we make in our language when we're talking with very young children is consistent across adults. So while we may have our own style of interacting with young children, when we look across lots of different adults, we see pretty much the same kinds of adjustments. And so in the early 80s, I would say, there was quite a bit of research about this very topic. And so the studies that were done first examined what do mothers do when they're talking with their infants and toddlers, children who are in the process of learning language. How do they talk differently to their children compared to how they talk with adults? And those findings, those studies found not only, again, that all the mothers made these adjustments, but they made the same kinds of adjustments.
Give us some examples.
And, well, the one thing I wanted to point out about that is that there was so much consistency in these adjustments that the term motherese was actually coined to describe these adjustments. So, for example, when you think about how you talk to, I understand you have a new grandbaby.
My new granddaughter, uh-huh. Right.
When you Addison talk Ann. With her, I'm pretty sure you're talking differently to her. At what age is she?
Well, she's just a few weeks old.
Just a few weeks old.
But I'm a talker, so it didn't stop me.
And so you talk differently to her, and I'll bet you when you talk to her, you don't say, "Hello, Addison, how are you doing?" My guess is that you say, "Hi, hi, Addison, how are you?" So you have more exaggeration in your pitch. You are using much shorter sentences or utterances than you would use in talking with even an older child whose language skills are further along, and certainly with an adult. So you're using maybe just a few words at a time. Are you hungry? Do you want to eat? Do you need a diaper? You know, those kinds of things. But you're using more exaggerated pitch. Your facial expressions are far more exaggerated than if you were talking to another adult.
Absolutely. You know, just light up.
Because, right.
And eye contact, too.
Yes.
Right?
The eye contact. And you're using simpler words. You are using much simpler grammar. Okay. So you're not using very long sentences and very complicated sentences. Now, it's suggested that the reason, one of the main reasons we do that is because it does, first of all, help get the child's attention and hold their attention. And then secondly, it helps, we are sort of making certain words and associations stand out for the child so that they learn to associate meanings with words, and we're not using language that's so complicated that they won't remember it and they won't understand it. So that's...
And so that's sort of the baseline, I guess, right? Because mm-hmm. we know that that happens. And you mentioned before that studies show that this is pretty much the routine everywhere. Does that mean across other cultures people act the same way?
There are some studies to show that even across cultures there are some adjustments, but there are cultural differences, particularly in terms of, for example, even the belief that it's important to talk with an infant or a young child.
Really?
And so in some cultures, there's not such a strong belief that it's important to interact with the child because they are so young and they are not really part of...
They're just a child,
yeah,
right?
They're just a child, yes.
Whereas in our culture, we do tend to be perhaps driven more by emotion in terms of that relationship.
Right. Try to engage children. And we like engaging our children. And we get something out of that just as well as they do. That, you know, we're being reinforced because they're paying attention to what we're saying. We're also really good at figuring out when they're no longer attending. And so when they look away, even an infant, when the infant looks away, we tend to either stop talking or look to see what is the infant looking at, and then we start talking about that.
Okay. Do we know what's going on in the brain of those youngsters as they first are exposed to words and language?
Well, we can gauge a lot by what the infant is attending to. And, you know, so we know, for example, that an infant will attend for longer periods of time to a familiar voice, very young infants. And then at some point, unfamiliar voices become interesting. So there's a lot of brain research. It's, you know, trying to figure out what is it that infants do attend to in speech, and how is it that they learn the sounds of their own language and the rules of their language, and you know, how does this all happen? How is the brain involved? And you know, amazingly enough, we talk about, you know, an infant that's born and is not speaking and is not intentionally communicating, although we interpret a lot of their behavior as though they are trying to communicate with us, which is important. By the time the child's 5 years old, you know, getting ready to enter school, they've actually acquired most of the rules of their language.
At the age of five.
They haven't mastered them, but they have acquired most of the rules of their language. And so, you know, we don't do any formal language training with children until they get into school. You know, that's when we start talking about, you know, nouns and verbs and and how words go together to create a sentence. But they have that knowledge before they get to school. They just can't talk about it.
So that's why your research is so important, because for many, many years, up until probably a couple of maybe two or three decades ago, most people did grow up in a home where one of the two caregivers were the parents, and you didn't necessarily have a stranger around the infant or the toddler for many, many, many hours a day when this language development is just beginning to take shape.
Correct. And that's actually how I got interested in looking at what it is that preschool teachers and child care providers do within interactions with children. Because as the number of children, preschool children and toddlers, as that number in terms of how many children were enrolled in child care centers and preschool programs increased, and as children were spending more of their day with what I call non-parental caregivers, we sort of make an assumption that those adults are doing the same kinds of or using the same kinds of strategies to facilitate language development that their own parents are using. And we didn't know that for sure. So I was most interested in finding out, if I looked at the communicative interactions of the child care provider and the children that they care for and the preschool teachers and the children that they work with, are we seeing a consistent use of the language and communication behaviors that are identified as having a positive effect on children's language development? And to what extent do we see them using behaviors that might have a negative effect on children's language development? So that's how I became interested in that.
Well, it's obviously important work because, as you say, by the age of five, if they're not on the right track, it could pose a lot of difficulties down the road, actually probably for the rest of their life. So how far along are you in the research, and what have you discovered at this point looking at those non-parental caregivers?
You know, it's interesting when you start studying the communication and language behavior of the child care providers and preschool teachers, and I meet with the child care providers and preschool teachers. When I explain what I'm interested in doing, just looking at their communicative interactions with young children, sometimes I feel that they might be a little bit nervous, wondering what it is exactly that I'm looking at. And what I've done is I've talked with them and said, you know, there, you are probably doing many of the things that parents naturally do in their interactions with children. So what I'd like to do is see when that happens, how it happens. There may be some activities that are more conducive to using those facilitating strategies, and sort of bring those to the attention of the child care provider and the preschool teacher and say, here's where you use these. You know, this is really good. Maybe it helps to have them think about using those strategies more often in lots of different kinds of activities. And so I have been really interested in looking at behaviors like contingent responsiveness and some of the simplified language that we see parents using when they are interacting with their own children. The contingent responsiveness I became interested in because it's a very early type of behavior that we see in a parent-child interaction where a contingent responsive behavior is one that immediately follows a behavior of the child. And if the child can make the connection between that response and their behavior, it can serve to increase the likelihood that that behavior will be repeated. So if your granddaughter is making some sounds and you immediately start talking to her and you see that she's continuing to do that, it could be that, you know, your response to her making the sounds has actually reinforced that behavior.
And so they begin to understand that by saying something, whatever baby talk is coming out, it results in some positive recognition or appreciation, at least, on the part of someone who is close to them.
Yes, and they're also learning that they can control the people around them and their environment, which is something we all like to be able to do,
yeah.
You know, control our environments and how things happen in the environment. So,
you're listening to WUWM, and this is UWM Today. Welcome to today's show. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio is Paula Reiner, Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders and the Associate Dean for Graduate Studies in the College of Health Sciences. We're talking about Paula's research work and the work of some of her colleagues. She's working with an interdisciplinary team back on campus, looking at how child's language develops, particularly when they are out of the home, when they're in a child care setting, babysitter, daycare, teacher who's watching the children, people other than the parents. What happens during that interaction? And Paula, when we just before the break, we were talking about that early stage where this interaction is going on, and how critical that is. So you're in the child care setting, you're watching these people interact. Do you keep score? I know you say you don't want to punish or make anybody feel that they're on the spot, but what's your sense, generally speaking? Are caregivers doing a pretty good job of taking the place of mom or dad in that interaction, that language interaction?
That's a very good question. What we have found in the studies that we have done is that the child care providers and preschool teachers do actually use strategies that are considered to be facilitating to children's language development. So they are responding contingently to children's behavior. They are simplifying their language and using simpler vocabulary. They are encouraging children to take the next turn in an interaction. So they are doing that. They also are doing some things that would be considered to have a negative effect on children's language development or could have a negative effect, such as using longer sentences that are more complicated and more difficult for children to understand.
Would they do that because in a lot of these settings you might have a range of ages and they might be thinking, well, I got to make the 3 or 4 year old understand, or they will understand if I use a sentence, but it's in front of a younger person, younger child who might not have those skills yet?
That's a really good observation, Tom, and it's actually a very good question and one that we don't quite have the answer to right now, because, for example, in a child care setting, within a particular group, the age range is not necessarily very broad. It may be 6 months, 8 months. So if you're talking about typically developing children, then you would expect that their language skills are about the same. But your question also points to the fact that we're very in tune to the language development of the children that we're interacting with. So even child care providers and preschool teachers are, and they may be doing some adjusting that way. But the other piece to that is that sometimes what we see happening with the child care providers and the preschool teachers' language might actually be a function of the type of activity. So, for example, when we look at their language and communication when they're just playing with children, what we call free play, it's not structured. It tends to be more child-directed, so the child determines what the focus of attention is and that sort of thing. Then we see that the adult, the child care provider or the teacher, is a bit more likely to use the facilitating strategies compared to something like a group circle time, which is a more structured, more formal type of activity. And there's particular, I'd say, goals maybe that the child care provider or the teacher is trying to accomplish at that time. You know, I got to get through this activity. I have to make sure that, you know, we're learning this song or we're going through this story. And so the adult, the child care provider, the preschool teacher may actually be what we would describe as more directive in that type of an activity. And so there may be a tendency to, in trying to manage the group and manage behavior and get through the activity, there may be some longer kinds of instructions that are being given, longer kinds of warnings about, you know, try to sit quietly, keeping the child's attention and that sort of thing. So it could be that the differences in the amount of structure could have an effect on the extent to which the caregivers and teachers are using the language facilitating strategies.
As you describe that, I don't mean any disrespect to teachers, but it sounds like what you're saying is that in those settings, the caregiver may sound more like a teacher than a mom.
And, I think that does happen.
And because if you've got a bunch of kids, you got to keep order. I mean, the discipline of trying to keep things contained is also a natural tendency or reaction, I guess.
And I would also say, though, that in doing that, I think that's there's some benefit to that, because when children get into school, there's going to be an expectation that they're able to sort of follow that script and will know the rules for participating in a group activity and when to take a turn and when to not take a turn, when to sit back and let someone else take a turn. And so those are all important kinds of communication skills to learn as well. So there may be some things that we can do within those more structured activities that actually would allow the caregiver or the teacher to use some of the language facilitating strategies a bit more often. I think there's also some activities that we might not consider quite as much when we're thinking about how do we want to facilitate children's language development. And that was one of the more recent studies that my team has done. We actually looked at what child care providers do in an unstructured activity, which was free play, a structured activity, which was sort of a group circle kind of activity. And then we chose snack time or mealtime, because it's sort of in between. And what we found is that the caregivers really did use quite a bit of the language facilitation strategies during snack time, and in some ways that looked very similar to the free play. So there may be other contexts that we need to think about more in terms of how can we capitalize on those in facilitating children's language.
Have you finished the study now, or is it ongoing?
The first one we have.
And your takeaway at this point, if you were to say, do I put my child into a daycare center or some sort of child care, knowing that I am concerned that they have good language development, what advice would you give?
I think there are a lot of benefits to having children in child care, and certainly the social interaction is a huge benefit, interacting with other adults and with peers. If I were going to be thinking about that for my child now, I would spend some time observing in the child care centers. I would ask, can I come in and observe? And I would want to see how the caregivers are interacting with the children. And if I'm in a center where I see that the caregivers are very focused on the children and engage the children in conversation, I would feel very good about that program.
Yeah. So it's, are they talking at my child or are they talking to my child? Mm-hmm. And of course, the tendency on the parent, of course, I think every parent is, I want the best. I want to make sure my child is in a good setting and that they'll be safe and, you know, that, that nothing, no harm will come to them. But it never occurred to me until I saw your research that that there could be, you know, a hidden danger in terms of stunting the language development if that piece of the puzzle isn't also on the table, which is the right kind of interaction.
Right. If I'm in a child care program and I don't see much interaction going on between adults and children other than taking care of basic needs. If I see TVs on, I get concerned.
Yeah. So a parent listening to the program has a youngster in child care, and I suspect if, you know, if I were one of them, I would go home and look at my little one at the end of a day as they come back into the house and really concentrate on, so how are they speaking? Are they interacting? Mm-hmm. Is there anything that a parent should be doing after the daycare setting adventure for that day is over with when they're back home? Should they do more one-on-one, more intimate conversation just to make sure that there is a good connection between the child and those language skills?
Very young children want to interact with their parents, and they enjoy that attention from their parents. They're very motivated, and when children are motivated, they're very likely to learn the language that we're modeling. And so any of those opportunities that a parent has to play with their child, read books, reading books is great. That's a great activity to engage in with your child. All of those kinds of activities. Talk about routine kinds of activities. When you're getting the meal ready and the child is watching you, talk about what it is that you're doing. At bath time, you talk about what's going on. And whenever the child is playing, talk about what the child is doing. That commenting is a way to connect with the child because the child is always interested in what they're doing. And so if you're talking about what they're doing, they're more likely to learn the language that you are mapping onto that kind of activity. I also want to point out that with child care providers, the other experience that I've had in working with child care providers is that they are very good at identifying children who might be at risk for a language learning problem. Children who have more severe kinds of language delays or disorders, those are easy to observe. A parent can observe them. A child care provider, a teacher can observe them. Child care providers, because of the experience I've had with lots of different children who are typically developing, they get to be pretty good at saying, I'm not so sure if this child's language is developing in a typical manner.
And so we talked about some of the possible negatives. That's a real positive of being in an environment where there are trained set of eyes.
Yes, and I've often had child care providers ask me, how do I approach a parent about that?
Wow. Well, Paula, fascinating topic, maybe more fascinating now that I'm a new grandparent and we'll be watching language development of my granddaughter. But we congratulate you on the research and we'll have you back as you continue this fascinating look at how language develops.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Paula Reiner, Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at UWM's College of Health Sciences, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.